this atop her heart, and take the inner and put it near my own. Then I kiss her lips and bury her. But I sob before I can finish. I uncover her face and kiss her again and hold my body to hers till I see a red sun rising through the artificial bubble roof. The colours of the place scald my eyes, and I cannot stop my tears. When I pull away, I see my headband poking from her pocket. She made it for me to take my sweat. I give it my tears now, and take it with me. Kieran strikes me in the face when he sees me back in the township. Lauren cannot speak, while Io's father slumps against a wall. They think they failed me. I hear Io's mother's cries. My mother says nothing as she makes me a meal. I don't feel well. It's hard to breathe. Liana comes in late and helps her, kissing me on the head as I eat, lingering long enough to smell my hair. I must use one hand as I move the food from plate to mouth. My mother holds my other hand between her calloused palms. She watches it instead of me, as though remembering when it was small and soft, and wondering how it became so hard. I finish the meal, just as Ugly Dan comes. My mother does not leave the table as I'm pulled away. Her eyes stay fixed on where my hand lay. I think she believes if she does not look up, this will not happen. She can only bear so much. They will hang me before a full assembly at 9 in the morning. I'm dizzy for some reason. My heart feels funny, slow. I hear the Arch-Governor's words to my wife echo. Is that all your strength? My people sing. We dance. We love. That is our strength. But we also dig. And then we die. Seldom do we get to choose why. That choice is power. That choice has been our only weapon, but it is not enough. They give me my last words. I called Dio up. Her eyes are bloodshot and swollen. She's a fragile thing, so unlike her sister. What were Io's last words? I ask her, though my mouth moves slowly, oddly. She glances back to my mother, who finally followed but now shakes her head. There is something they are not telling me. Something they don't want me to know. A secret, held back, even though I am about to die.
She said she loved you.
I don't believe her. But I smile and kiss her forehead. She can't handle more questions. And I'm dizzy. Hard to speak. I'll tell her you say hello. I do not sing. I am made for other things. My death is senseless. It is love. But Io was right. I don't understand this. This is not my victory. This is selfish. She told me to live for more. She wanted me to fight. But here I am, dying despite what she wanted, giving up because of the pain. I panic, as suicides do, when they realize their folly. Too late. I feel the door beneath me open. My body falls. Rope flays my neck, my spine creaks. Needles lance my lumbar. Kieran stumbles forward. Uncle Nero shoves him away. With a wink, he touches my feet and pulls. I hope they do not bury me.
Part 2. Reborn. There is a festival, where we wear the faces of demons to ward evil spirits from our dead in the veil. The faces sparkle with fool's gold. Chapter 7 Lazarus. I do not see Io in death. My kin believe we see our loved ones when we pass on. They wait for us in a green veil, where wood fire smoke and the scent of stews thicken the air. There is an old man with dew on his cap, who makes safe the veil, and he stands with our kin, waiting for us along a stone road, beside which sheep graze. They say the mist there is fresh, and the flowers sweet, and those who are buried pass along the stone road faster. But I do not see my love. I do not see the veil. I see nothing but phantom lights in the darkness. I feel pressure, and I know, as would any miner, that I am buried beneath the earth. I loose a soundless scream. Dirt enters my mouth. Panic fills me. I cannot breathe, cannot move. The earth hugs me till finally I claw my way free, feel air, gasp oxygen, pant and spit dirt. It is minutes before I look up from my knees. I crouch in an abandoned mine, an old tunnel, long deserted, but still connected to the ventilation system. It smells of dirt. A single flare burns beside my grave, splaying weird shadows over the walls. It singes my sight, like the sun did as it rose over Io's grave. I'm not dead. The realization takes longer in coming than one might have thought. But there's a bloody wound around my neck, where the rope cut the skin. There's dirt in the lashes on my back. Still, I'm not dead. Uncle Nero didn't pull my feet hard enough. But surely the tin pots would have checked. Unless they were lazy. Not a stretch to think that, but something else is at play. I was too woozy when I walked to the gallows. I feel something in my veins even now, a lethargy, as though I've been drugged. Nero did this. He drugged me. He buried me. But why? And how would he escape being caught when he pulled my body down? When a low rumbling comes from the darkness beyond the flare, I know I will have answers. A tumbler, like a metal beetle on six wheels, crawls over the crest of a long tunnel. Its front grille hisses steam as it comes to a stop in front of me. 18 lights singe my vision. Shapes exit the sides of the vehicle, cutting across the glare of the headlights to grab me. I'm too stunned to resist. Their hands are calloused like miners, and their faces are covered with Oktobernacht demon masks. Yet they move me gently, guiding instead of forcing me into the tumbler's hatch. Inside the tumbler, the globe light is red and bloody. I sit in a worn metal bucket seat across from the two figures that fetched me from my grave. A female's mask is pale white and gold, horns like a cacodemon. Her eyes glitter darkly out from the eye holes. The other figure is a timid man. He's willowy and quiet, seemingly frightened of me. His snarling bat-face mask can't conceal his shy glances, or the way in which he hides his hands, a trait of the frightened, as Uncle Nero always claimed when he taught me to dance. "You're sons of Ares, aren't you?" "I guess." The weakling flinches, while the woman's eyes are mocking.
"And you're Lazarus," she says.
I find her voice cold, lazy. It plays with the ears as a cat plays with a caught mouse.
"I am Darrow."
"Oh, we know who you are."
"Don't tell him anything, Harmony," the weakling gibbers. "Dancer didn't tell us to discuss anything with him till we get home."
"Thank you, Ralph."
Harmony sighs at the weakling and shakes her head.
After realizing his error, the weakling shifts uncomfortably in his bucket seat, but I've stopped paying him any mind. Here, the woman is king. Unlike the weaklings, her mask is like that of an old crone, one of the witches of Earth's fallen cities, who made soup from the marrow of children's bones. You're a mess. Harmony reaches to touch my neck. I grab her hand and squeeze. Her bones are brittle as hollow plastic in a helldiver's hand. The weakling reaches for his thumper, but Harmony motions him to calm down.
Why am I not dead? I ask.
After the hanging, my voice is like gravel dragged over metal.
Because Ares has a mission for you, little helldiver.
She winces as I squeeze her hand.
Ares.
My mind flashes to images of bomb blasts, disembodied limbs, chaos. Ares. I know what sort of mission he'll want. I'm too numb to even know what I'll say when he asks. My mind is on Io, not this life. I am a shell. Why could I not have stayed in the ground?
May I have my hand back now?
Harmony asks.
If you take off your mask. Otherwise, I'm keeping it.
She laughs and strips away her mask. Her face is day and night.
The right side, a ragged and distended mess of skin running and folding together in smooth scar rivers. A steam burn. A familiar sight, but not on women. Rare for a woman to be on a drill team. Yet it is the unburned side of her face that startles. She is beautiful. More beautiful even than Io. Skin soft, pale as milk. Bones prominent and delicate. Yet she looks so cold. So angry and cruel. Her bottom teeth are uneven and her nails poorly maintained. She has knives in her boots. I can tell by the way she flinched down when I grabbed her hand. The weakling, Ralph, is unremarkably ugly. Dark face like a hatchet, teeth all ajar and grimy. He stares out the tumbler's window hatch as we drive through abandoned tunnels till we reach lit, paved tunnel roads meant for fast moving. I do not know these Reds. And though they have the red sigil emblazoned on their hands, I do not trust them. They are not of Lambda, or Lycos. Might as well be Silvers. Eventually, I glimpse other utility vehicles and tumblers out the hatch. I don't know where we are, yet that bothers me less than the swelling sadness in my chest. The farther we ride, and the more time I'm given to my thoughts, the worse the pain becomes. I finger my wedding band. Io is still dead. She's not waiting for me at the end of this ride. Why did I survive when she did not? Why did I pull her feet so hard? Could she have lived too? My guts feel like a black hole. A terrible weight compresses my chest, and I ache to just jump from the tumbler into the path of a utility vehicle. Death is easy when you've already tried to find it. But I don't jump. I sit with Harmony and Ralph. Io wanted more for me. I clench the scarlet headband in my fist. The tunnel road widens slightly when we come to a checkpoint manned by dirty tin pots and worn-down gear. The electric gate isn't even charged. They let the tumbler ahead of us through after scanning a panel on its side. Then it's our turn, and I'm shifting uncomfortably in my seat along with Ralph. Harmony chuckles disdainfully as the grey-haired tin pot scans the side of the tumbler and waves us through the gate.
We have a passcode. No brains in slaves. Mine tin pots are idiots. It's the grey elite or the obsidian monsters you watch out for. But they don't waste their time down here.
I'm trying to convince myself that this all is not some gold trick, that Harmony and Ralph are not enemies. When we pull off the main tunnel road into a cul-de-sac of utility warehouses not much larger than the common. Harsh sulphur lights hang down from utility fixtures. Half the bulbs are burned out. One flickers on and off above a garage near a warehouse marked with a queer symbol done in strange paint. We steer into the garage. The door closes and Harmony motions for me to get out of the tumbler.
"Home, sweet home," she says. "Now, time to meet Dancer."
Chapter 8 Dancer.
Dancer looks through me. He's near enough my height, which is rare. But he's thick and terribly old, maybe in his 40s. White swirls from his temples. A dozen twin scars mark his neck. I've seen their sort before. Pit viper bites. The arm on the left side of his body hangs limp. Nerve damage. But his eyes arrest me. They are brighter than most, swirling with patterns of true red, not rust red. He has a fatherly smile.
"You must be wondering who we are,"
Dancer says gently. He's big, but his voice is easy. 8 reds are with him, all men except for Harmony, and they watch him with adoring eyes.
"All miners, I think, each with the scarred, strong hands of our kind.
They move with the grace of our people. No doubt some were jumpers and boasters, as we call those who run along the walls and perform the flips at dances. Any hell divers?"
"He's not wondering."
Harmony takes time with the words, rolling them along her tongue. She squeezes Dancer's hand as she passes around him to look at me. "Bloody damn runt pegged it an hour ago."
"Ah."
Dancer smiles softly at her.
"Of course you did. Otherwise Ares wouldn't have asked us to risk extracting him here. Do you know where here is, Darrow?"
"It doesn't matter," I murmur. I look around at the walls, the men, the swaying lights. Everything is so cold, so dirty. "What matters is..." I fail to finish my own sentence. A thought of Io severs my voice. "What matters is that you want something from me."
"Yes, that matters," says Dancer.
His hand touches my shoulder.
"Well, that can wait. I'm surprised you're standing. The wounds on your back are sullied. You'll need antibac and skin rest to stop the scarring."
"Scars don't matter," I say. I stare at the 2 blood drops that trickle from my shirt tail to the floor. My wounds reopened when I climbed from the grave. "Io is dead, yes?"
"Yes, she is. We couldn't save her, Darrow."
"Why not?" I ask.
"We just couldn't."
"Why not?" I repeat. I glare up at him, glare at his followers, and hiss the words one by one. "You saved me. You could have saved her. She is the one you would have wanted, the bloody damn martyr. She cared about all this. Or does Ares only need sons, not daughters?"
"Martyrs are a dime a dozen,"
Harmony yawns. I slip forward like a serpent and grab her around the throat. Waves of anger ripple through my face till it goes numb and I feel tears welling behind my eyes. Scorchers whine as they're primed around me. One jams into the back of my neck. I feel its cold muzzle. "Let her go," someone shouts. "Do it, boy." I spit at them,
shake Harmony once and toss her aside. She crouches on the floor, hacking, and then a knife glimmers in her hand as she rises. Dancer stumbles between us.
Stop it, both of you. Darrow, please.
Your girl was a dreamer, boy.
Harmony spits at me from Dancer's other side.
As worthless as a flame over water.
Harmony, shut your bloody damn gob.
Dancer barks.
Put those damn things away.
The Scorchers go quiet. A tense silence follows, and he leans in close to speak with me. His voice lowers. My breath is fast.
Darrow, we're friends.
We're friends. Now, I can't answer for Ares. Why he couldn't help us save your girl. I am just one of his hands. I can't wash away the pain. I can't bring your wife back to you. But, Darrow, look at me. Look at me, Helldiver.
I do. Right into those blood-red eyes.
I can't do many things, but I can bring you justice. Dancer goes to Harmony and whispers something, likely telling her that we're to be friends.
We won't be.
But I promise not to choke her, and she promises not to stab me. She is quiet as she guides me from the others through cramped metal hallways to a small door opened by twisting a knob. Our feet echo over rusting walkways. The room is small and littered with tables and medical supplies. She has me strip and sit on one of the cold tables so she can clean my wounds. Her hands are not gentle as they scrub dirt from my lacerated back. I try not to scream.
You're a fool, she says as she scrapes rock out of a deep wound.
I wheeze in pain and try to say something, but she jams her finger into my back, cutting me short.
Dreamers like your wife are limited, little Helldiver.
She makes sure I don't speak.
Understand that. The only power they have is in death. The harder they die, the louder their voice, the deeper the echoes. But your wife served her purpose.
Her purpose?
It sounds so cold, so distant and sad. As though my girl of smiles and laughter was meant for nothing but death. Harmony's words carve into me, and I stare at the metal grating before turning to look into her angry eyes. Then what is your purpose? I ask. She holds up her hands, caked with dirt and blood.
The same as yours, little Helldiver. To make the dream come true.
After Harmony scours my back of dirt and gives me a dose of antibac, she takes me to a room next to humming generators. The squat quarters are lined with cots and a liquid flush. She leaves me to it. The shower is a terrifying thing. Though it's gentler than the air of the flush, half the time I feel like I'm drowning, the other half I find a mixture of ecstasy and agony. I turn the heat nozzle till steam rises thick and pain lances my back. Clean. I dress in the strange garments they've set out for me. It's not a jumpsuit or homespun weave like I'm used to wearing. The material is sleek, elegant, like something someone of a different colour would wear. Dancer comes into the room when I'm half-dressed. His left foot drags behind him, almost as useless as his left arm. Yet still, he's an impressive man, thicker than Barlow, handsomer than me despite his age and the bite scars on his neck. He carries a tin bowl and sits on one of the cots which creaks against his weight.
We saved your life, Darrow.
So, your life is ours. Do you not agree? My uncle saved my life, I say.
The drunk? Dancer snorts. The best thing he ever did was tell us about you.
And he should have done that when you were a boy, but he kept you a secret. He's worked for us since before your father's death as an informer, you know. Is he hanged now?
Now that he pulled you down? I should hope not. We gave him a jammer to shut off their ancient cameras. He did the work of a ghost.
Uncle Nero. Head talk, but drunk as a fool. I always thought him weak. He still is. No strong man would drink like him, or be so bitter. But he never earned the disdain I gave him. Yet, why did he not save Io?
You act like my uncle bloody damn owed you, I say. He owes his people.
People! I laugh at the term. There is family. There is clan. There may even be township and mine, but people! People! And you act as though you're my representative. As though you have a right to my life. But you're just a fool. All you sons of Ares.
My voice is withering in its condescension. Fools who can do nothing but blow things up, like children kicking pit vipers' nests in rage.
That's what I want to do. I want to kick, to lash out. That's why I insult him. That's why I spit on the sons, even though I have no real cause to hate them.
Dancer's handsome face curls into a tired smile, and it's only then that I realize how feeble his dead arm really is, thinner than his muscular right arm, bent like a flower's root. But despite the withered limb, there's a twisted menace to Dancer, a less obvious sort than that in Harmony. It comes out when I laugh at him, when I scorn him and his dreams.
Our informants exist to feed us information, and to help us find the outliers so we can extract the best of Red from the mines.
So you can use us?
Dancer smiles tightly and picks up the bowl from the cot.
We will play a game to see if you are one of these outliers, Darrow. If you win, I will take you to see something few low reds have seen.
Low reds? I've never heard the term before.
And if I lose? Then you are not an outlier, and the Golds win yet again.
I flinch at the notion. He holds out a bowl and explains the rules.
There are two cards in the bowl. One bears the Reaper's scythe. The other bears a lamb. Pick the scythe and you lose. Pick the lamb and you win.
Except I notice his voice fluctuate when he says this last bit. This is a test, which means there is no element of luck to it. It must then be measuring my intelligence, which means there is a kink. The only way the game could test my intelligence is if the cards are both scythes. That's the singular variable that could be altered. Simple.
I stare into Dancer's handsome eyes. It is a rigged game. I'm used to these, and usually I follow the rules. Just not this time.
I'll play.
I reach into the bowl and pull free a card, taking care that only I can see its face.
It's a scythe.
Dancer's eyes never leave mine.
I win, I say.
He reaches for the card to see its face, but I shove it into my mouth before he can take hold of it. He never sees what I drew.
Dancer watches me chew on the paper. I swallow and pull the remaining card from the bowl and toss it at him. A scythe.
The lamb card simply looked too good not to eat, I say.
Perfectly understandable.
The red in his eyes twinkles, and he sets the bowl aside.
Warmth of character returns to him, as if he'd never been a menace.
Do you know why we call ourselves Sons of Ares, Darrow? To the Romans, Mars was the god of war, a god of military glory, defence of the hearth and home, honourable and all. But Mars is a fraud. He is a romanticized version of the Greek god Ares.
Dancer lights a burner, and hands a second one to me. The generators buzz freshly, and the burner fills me with a similar haze as its smoke curls through my lungs.
Ares was a bastard, an evil patron of rage, violence, bloodlust, and massacre, he says.
So by naming yourselves after him, you're pointing to the truth of things within the society. Cute.
Something like that. The Goals would prefer for us to forget history. And most of us have. Or were never taught it. But I know how gold rose to power hundreds of years ago. They call it the conquering. They butchered any who contested them. Massacred cities. Continents. Not many years ago, they reduced an entire world to ash. Rhea. The Ash Lord nuked it to oblivion. It was with Ares' wrath that they acted. And now, we are the sons of that wrath.
Are you Ares? I ask, voice hushed.
Worlds. They've destroyed worlds. But Rhea is so much farther out from Earth than Mars. It's one of Saturn's moons, I think. Why would they nuke a world all the way out there?
No, I'm not Ares, he answers.
But you belong to him.
I belong to no one but Harmony and my people. I'm like you, Darrow. Born to a clan of Earth diggers, miners from the colony Tyros. Only I know more of the world.
He frowns at my impatient expression.
You think me a terrorist? I am not.
No? I ask.
He leans back and takes a drag on his burner. Imagine there was a table covered with fleas, he explains. The fleas would jump and jump to heights unknown. Then a man came along and upturned a glass jar over the fleas. The fleas jumped and hit the top of the jar and could go no farther. Then the man removed the jar, and yet the fleas did not jump higher than they had grown accustomed, because they believed there to still be a glass ceiling.
He breathes out smoke. I see his eyes glow through it like the ember tip of his burner.
We are the fleas who jump high. Now, let me show you just how high.
Dancer takes me down a rickety corridor to a cylindrical metal lift. It's a rusty thing, heavy, and it squeals as we rise steadily upward.
You should know that your wife didn't die in vain, Darrow. The Greens who help us hijacked the broadcast. We hacked in and played the true version over every HC on our planet. The planet, the clans of the 100,000 mining colonies and those in the cities have heard your wife's song.
You tell tall tales, I grumble. There aren't half that many colonies.
He ignores me.
They heard her song, and they call her Persephone already.
I flinch and look over at him. No, that is not her name. She is not their symbol. She doesn't belong to these brigands with trumped-up names.
Her name is Io, I sneer, and she belongs to Lycos. She belongs to her people now, Darrow, and they remember the old tales of a goddess stolen from her family by the god of death.
Yet even when she was stolen, death could not forever keep her.
She was the maiden, the goddess of spring, destined to return after each winter.
Beauty incarnate can touch life even from the grave. That's how they think of your wife.
She's not coming back, I say, to end the conversation.
It is futile debating with this man. He just rolls on.
Our lift comes to a halt, and we exit into a small tunnel. Following it, we come to another lift of sleeker metal, better maintained.
Two suns guarded with scorchers. Soon we're going upward again.
She will not come back, but her beauty, her voice, will echo until the end of time.
She believed in something beyond herself, and her death gave her voice power it didn't have in life.
She was pure, like your father.
We, you and I,
he touches my chest with the back of his index finger,
are dirty. We are made for blood. Rough hands, dirty hearts. We are lesser creatures in the grand scheme of things, but without us men of war, no one except those of Lycos would hear Io's song. Without our rough hands, the dreams of the pure hearts would never be built.
Cut to the point, I interrupt. You want me for something.
You tried to die before, Dancer says. Do you want to do so again?
I want...
What do I want?
I want to kill Augustus,
I say, remembering the cold, golden face as it commanded my wife's death. It was so distant, so uncaring.
He will not live while Io lies dead.
I think of Magistrate Paginus and Ugly Dan. I will kill them too.
Vengeance, then, he sighs.
You said you could give it to me.
I said I would give you justice.
Vengeance is an empty thing, Darrow.
It will fill me.
Help me kill the Arch-Governor.
Darrow, you set your sights too low.
The lift picks up speed. My ears pop. Up and up and up. How far does this lift rise?
The Arch-Governor is merely one of the most important golds on Mars.
Dancer hands me a pair of tinted glasses. I put them on tentatively, as my heart tugs in my chest.
We're going to the surface.
You must widen your gaze.
The lift stops. The doors open. And I am blind. Behind the glasses, my pupils constrict to adjust to the light. When, at last, I'm able to open my eyes, I expect to see a massive glowing bulb or a flare, some source to the light, but I see nothing. The light is ambient, from some distant, impossible source. Some human instinct in me knows this power, knows this primal origin of life. The sun. Daylight.
My hands tremble, and I step with Dancer from the elevator.
He does not speak. I doubt I would hear him, even if he did.
We stand in a room of strange makings, unlike any I've imagined. There is a substance underfoot, hard but neither metal nor rock.
Wood.
I know it from the HC pictures of Earth.
A carpet of a thousand hues spreads over it, soft under my feet.
The walls around are of red wood, carved with trees and deer. Soft music plays in the distance.
I follow the tune, deeper into the room, toward the light.
I find a bank of glass, a large wall that lets the sun in to shine across the length of a squat, black instrument with white keys, which plays itself in a tall room with three walls and a long bank of glass windows. Everything is so smooth. Beyond the instrument, beyond the glass, lies something I don't understand. I stumble toward the window, toward the light, and fall to my knees, pressing my hands against the barrier. I moan one long note.
Now you understand, Dancer says. We are deceived.
Beyond the glass sprawls a city.
Chapter 9.
the lie. The city is one of spires, parks, rivers, gardens, and fountains. It is a city of dreams, a city of blue water and green life on a red planet that is supposed to be as barren as the cruelest desert. This is not the Mars they show us on the HC. This is not a place unfit for man. It is a place of lies, wealth, and immense abundance. I gasp at the grotesquerie. Men and women fly. They shimmer gold and silver. Those are the only colours I see in the sky. Their grav boots carry them about like gods, the technology so much more graceful than the clumsy grav boots our keepers wear in the mines. A young man soars past my window, his skin burnished, his hair fluttering loosely behind him as he carries two bottles of wine toward a nearby garden spire. He's drunk, and his wobbling through the air reminds me of a time I saw Drill Boy's air system break down in his fry suit. He gasped for oxygen as he died, twitching and dancing. This gold laughs like a fool and does a mirthful spin. Four girls, not at all older than me, fly after him in a merry hunt, giddy and giggling. Their tight dresses seem to be made of liquid and drip around their young curves. They look my age, in a way, but seem so bloody foolish. I do not understand. Beyond them, ships flit through the air along beacon-lit avenues. Small ships, rip wings, as Dancer calls them, escort the most intricate of air yachts. On the ground I see men and women moving through wide avenues. There are automobiles, colour-coded lamps along the lower levels. Yellow, blue, orange, green, pink, 100 shades of a dozen colours to form a hierarchy so complex, so alien, I scarcely think it a human concept. The buildings through which the paths wind are huge, some of glass, some of stone. But many remind me of those I've seen on the HC, those buildings of the Romans, made this time for gods instead of man. Beyond the city, which stretches nearly as far as I can see, Mars's red and barren surface is scarred with the green of grass and struggling woods. The sky above is blue, stained with stars. The terraforming is complete. This is the future. It should not be this way for generations. My life is a lie. So many times has Octavia Auloon told us of Lycos that we are the pioneers of Mars, that we are the brave souls who sacrifice for the race, that soon our toils for humanity will be over. Soon the softer colours will join us, once Mars is habitable. But they have already joined us. Earth has come to Mars, and we, pioneers, were left below, slaving, toiling, suffering to create and maintain the foundation of this empire. We are, as Io always said, the society's slaves. Dancer sits in a chair behind me and waits till I can speak. He says a word and the windows darken. I can still see the city, but the sun no longer blinds my eyes. Behind us, the squat instrument called a piano whispers a dreary melody. They told us we were man's only hope, I say quietly. That Earth was overcrowded. That all the pain, all the sacrifice, was for mankind. Sacrifice is good. Obedience, the highest virtue. The laughing gold has reached the nearby spire. He surrenders to the girls and their kisses. Soon they will drink their wine and have their amusement.
Dancer tells me how it is. Earth ain't overcrowded, Darrell. 700 years back, they expanded to their moon, Luna. Because it is so difficult to launch spacecraft through Earth's gravity and atmosphere, Luna became Earth's port through which it colonized the moons and planets of the solar system.
700 years?
I gasp, feeling suddenly very stupid. On Luna, efficiency and order became the chief concern. In space, every set of lungs must have a purpose, so the first colours were gradually instituted, and the reds were sent to Mars to gather the fuel for mankind. The mining colonies were established there since Mars has the highest concentration of helium-3, which is used to terraform the other worlds and moons. At least that wasn't a lie.
Are they terraformed? The other moons and worlds?
The small moons, yes. Most of the planets. Obviously not the gas giants. He sits in a chair. It was in the early stages of the colonization, when the wealthy of Luna began to realize Earth was nothing more than a drain on their profits. Even as Luna colonized the solar system, they were taxed and owned by corporations and countries on Earth. But those same entities could not enforce their ownership. So, Luna rebelled. The Golds and their society against the countries of Earth. Earth fought back, and Earth lost. That was the conquering. Economics turned Luna into the power and port of the solar system. And the society began to change into what it is today. An empire built on red backs.
I watch the colours move about below. They are small, hard to distinguish from our height. And my eyes are not used to seeing so far or seeing so much light.
Reds were sent to Mars 500 years ago. The other colours came to Mars about 300 years back, while our ancestors still toiled beneath the surface. They lived in the para-terraformed cities, cities with bubbles of atmosphere over them, while the rest of the world terraformed slowly. Now, the bubbles are coming down, and the world is fit for any man. High Reds live as maintenance workers, sanitation, grain harvesters, assembly workers. Low Reds are those of us born beneath the surface, the truest slaves. In the cities, the Reds who dance disappear. Those who voice their thoughts vanish. Those who bow their heads and accept the rule of the society and their place in society, as all colours do, live on with relative freedom. He exhales a cloud of smoke.
I feel outside my body, as though I'm watching the colonization of worlds, the transformation of the human species through eyes that are not my own. The gravity of history drew my people into slavery. We are the bottom of the society. The dirt.
Io always preached something of the like, though she never knew the truth.
If she had known this, how much more passionately would she have spoken? This existence is worse than she ever could have imagined.
It is not hard to understand the conviction with which the sons of Ares fight.
500 years.
I shake my head.
This is our bloody damn planet.
Through sweat and toil it was made so, he agrees.
Then what will it take to take it back?
Blood.
Dancer smiles at me like a township alley cat. There's a beast behind this man's fatherly smiles.
Ia was right. It comes to violence. She was the voice, like my father. So what am I to be?
The avenging hand.
I cannot grasp that someone so pure, so full of love, would want me to play this part. But she did. I think of my father's last dance. I think of my mum, Leanna, Kieran, Lauren, Eo's parents, Uncle Neryl, Barlow, everyone I love. I know how hard they will live and how quickly they will die. And I now know why. I look down at my hands. They are what Dancer called them. Cut, scarred, burned things. When Eo kissed them, they grew gentle for love. Now that she is gone, they grow hard for hate. I clench them into fists till my knuckles are white as ice caps. What is my mission?
Chapter 10. The Carver. I grew up with a quick-smiling girl of 15, so in love with her young husband that when he was burned in the mines and his wound festered, she sold her body to a gamma in return for antibiotics. She was stronger than her husband. When he grew well and discovered what had been done on his behalf, he killed the gamma with a sling blade snuck from the mines. Easy to guess what happened after that. Her name was Lana, and she was Uncle Nero's daughter. She lives no longer. I think of her as I watch the HC in what Harmony called the penthouse, as Dancer makes preparations. I flip through the many channels with the twitch of my finger. Even that gamma had a family. He dug like me. He was born like me, went through the flush like me, and he never saw the sun, either. He was just given a little packet of medicine by the society. And look at the effect. How clever of them. How much hate they create between people who should be kin. But if the clans knew what luxury exists on the surface, if they knew how much had been stolen from them, they would feel the hatred I feel. They would unite. My clan is a hot-tempered breed. What would a rebellion of theirs look like? Probably like Dago's burner. Burning hot, but fast, till all was ash. I asked Dancer why the sons streamed my wife's death to the mines. Why not instead show the low-reds the wealth of the surface? That would sow anger.
Because a rebellion now would be crushed in days,
Dancer explained.
We must take a different path. An empire cannot be destroyed from without till it is destroyed from within. Remember that. We're empire breakers, not terrorists.
When Dancer told me what I am to do, I laughed. I do not know if I can do it. I am a speck. 1,000 cities span the face of Mars. Metal behemoths sail between the planets in fleets carrying weapons that can crack the mantle of a moon. On distant Luna, buildings rise 7 miles high.
There the sovereign consul, Octavia O'Loon, rules with her imperators and praetors.
The Ash Lord who made the world of Rhea cinders is her minion. She controls the 12 Olympic knights, legions of peerless scarred, and obsidians as innumerable as the stars. And those obsidians are only the elite. The grey soldiers prowl the cities, ensuring order, ensuring obedience to the hierarchy. The whites arbitrate their justice and push their philosophy. Pinks pleasure and serve in high-colour homes. Silvers count and manipulate currency and logistics. Yellows study the medicines and sciences. Greens develop technology. Blues navigate the stars. Coppers run the bureaucracy. Every colour has a purpose. Every colour props up the golds. The HC shows me colours I did not know existed. It shows me fashion. Ludicrous and seductive. There are biomodifications and flesh implants. Women with skin so smooth and polished, breasts so round, hair so glossed that they appear a different species from Io and all the women I've ever known. The men are freakishly muscular and tall. Their arms and chests bulge with artificial strength, and they flaunt their muscle like girls showing off new toys. I am a Lambda Helldiver of Lycos. But what is that compared with all this?
Harmony is here. Time to go.
Dancer says from the door.
I want to fight, I tell him, as we ride the grav lift down with Harmony.
They've doctored my sigils so that they are brighter to match the high reds. I wear the loose garb of a high red and carry a pack of street scrubbing equipment. There's dye in my hair and contacts in my eyes, all so I look a brighter shade of red. Less dirty.
I don't want this mission. Worse, I can't do it. Who could?
You said you would do anything that needed to be done,
Dancer says.
But this...
The mission he has given me is madness. Yet, that's not why I'm frightened. My fear is that I will become something Ea would not recognize. I'll become a demon from our Octobernacht stories.
Give me a scorcher or a bomb. Let someone else do this.
We brought you out for this, Harmony sighs. And only this. It has been Ares' greatest goal since the sons were born.
How many others have you brought out? How many others have tried what you're asking me to try?
Harmony looks over at Dancer. He says nothing, so she answers impatiently on his behalf. 97 have failed the carving. That we know of.
Bloody damn.
I curse.
And what happened to them?
They died, she says blandly. Or they asked for death.
Maybe Nerol should have let me hang.
I try to laugh. Darrow, come here. Come.
He grabs my shoulder and pulls me in.
Others may have failed, but you'll be different, Darrow. I feel it in my bones.
My legs go shaky when I first look up at the night sky and the buildings stretching around me. I slip into vertigo. I feel like I'm falling, like the world is off its axis. Everything is too open. So much so that it seems as though the city should tumble into the sky. I look at my feet, look at the street, and try to imagine that I'm in the tunnel roads from the townships to the common. The streets of Yorkton, the city, are a strange place at night. Luminescent balls of light line the sidewalks and streets. HC videos run like liquid streams along parts of the avenue in this high-tech sector of the city, so most walk upon the moving pathways or ride in public transportation with their heads crooked down like cane handles. Garish lights make the night almost as bright as day. I see even more colours. This sector of the city is clean. Teams of red sanitation workers scour the streets. Its roads and walking paths stretch in perfect order. There's a faint ribbon of red where we are to walk, a narrow ribbon in a broad street. Our path does not move like the others. A copper woman walks along her wider path. Her favourite programmes play wherever she walks, unless she strides beside a gold, in which case all the HCs go quiet. But most golds do not walk. They are permitted grav boots and coaches, as are any of the coppers, obsidians, greys and silvers with the proper licence,
though the licensed boots are horribly shoddy things. An advertisement for a blister cream appears on the ground in front of me. A woman of strangely slender proportions slinks out of a red lace robe. Suitably naked, she then applies the cream to a place in her body where no woman has ever before gotten a blister. I blush and look away in disgust because I've only ever seen one woman naked.
You'll want to forget your modesty, Harmony advises. It'll mark you worse than your colour.
It is disgusting, I say.
It's advertising, darling, Harmony purrs condescendingly. She shares a chuckle with